Welcome to Kristen and Chill. It's episode number 2 this week. That's right, you heard it right, number 2. I would do 3, but I can't count that high. That didn't make any sense. Welcome to the second show of the week, and I hope you enjoyed the bonus episode yesterday where we threw back to Mentally Chill, which I actually should have put out today because today's Thursday and it's that whole throwback Thursday thing. But I broke the social media law and I posted something that was a throwback, but on a Wednesday. So take that, social media. I'm a rebel. So an episode from a couple weeks ago with Seth Herzog, I was bragging and or talking, but I'll just call it bragging, about how my favorite color is gray. And now I'm eating my words because I'm starting to feel the effects of a spring in the Northeast. I haven't been in the Northeast for a spring in 10 years. And I was in California talking trash about how I love seasons and how I need seasons. And now I'm getting the seasons and I'm not so tough anymore, huh? I'm all tough over there in the sunny shine. Oh, give me winter, give me spring. I like the feeling of seasons. And now tough guys back in the seasons. And I did actually pretty good with winter, but the spring is kind of killing me. So it's all gray. And I really feel the pressure here to make a 50 Shades of Grey reference, but I'm not going to. I'm actually going to reference the more intense sexual novel called 100 Shades of Grey, because that's how many shades of gray are here. I didn't want to say that. Lots of shades of gray. And I found I'm a fan of gray as long as it's a physical object. But if it's the sky, ugh. For more than 3 days in a row, I can't take it. 2 days, okay. But 3 days, talk about overstaying your welcome. That's what I did as a kid at my friend Jen's house. So I always overstayed my welcome, resident consultant Jen's. Anyway, I hope the gray isn't affecting you guys if you are in gray. And I kind of feel like up in the antidepressant dose. Not gonna, because I don't think it's necessary yet. But yeah, sunshine. Hey, would like to see you sometime soon. Text me back. Bye. All right. So this episode, I have Patrick Schroeder on, who's a comedian that I was on a roast with at Caroline's. And we roasted ex-Yankee Shane Spencer. And Patrick's so good at doing roasts. You should look him up on YouTube. Just type in Patrick Schroeder roast. He kills every time. Every opponent that he roasts, he takes down. And he also has a really funny podcast called The Good, The Dad, and The Ugly, which you can find on iTunes and all those podcasty listening places. And we talk about everything from why he only cries at sports-related things to how he doesn't want to give high fives, which I kind of understand and wanted to high-five him over. I hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. Please remember to rate and review on iTunes if you have an extra second or two. My voice just went really high there for no reason. And if you would like to support the show, please come visit me on Patreon at patreon.com/Kristen and Chill. This is how I survive, believe it or not. This is how I survive. So if you enjoy the show, if you get something out of it, if you listen to it weekly, please go throw me some dollars. Dollar bills, y'all. Thanks as always for tuning back in, and I hope you guys are doing well, staying out of the gray, 100 shades of it, and I hope you enjoy this week's show, second show, right? Throwing it out there, letting you guys know again, reminding you, 2 shows this week, patreon.com/Kristen and Jill. Enjoy. So yeah, we just chit-chat like we know each other.
This is, yeah.
But right. We don't really know each other.
No, we met doing the roast of Shane Spencer at Caroline's Comedy Club.
Which most people will have no idea who that is.
Did you get your autographed baseball afterwards?
I did.
Yes.
Did you get yours?
I did, and he signed it, Good Luck on SNL. I don't know who he thinks I was. I know he got pretty drunk by the end of it. So
he definitely thought you were funnier than you were.
Well, that was the alcohol also
right.
Helped that.
Well, the whole night, so we did this roast and I'm the only female on there. And it is 2019. Well, at the point, it was 2018. So maybe I guess it was 1950 in their minds.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Very long time ago. But the jokes for me, coming from non-comics, a lot of them weren't comics, but yeah. All had to do with being a slut or like sucking dick to get on the show. and those don't offend me. It's just, they're so lazy. I'm like, you can't, I have a lazy eye. That you can Google me and see that I have a lazy eye. That's so easy to make fun of, but they all just went for the slutty angle. And I'm not even, if I was a slut, it'd be funny. Maybe.
Yeah, there was no real, it was just like you were just, a woman just and these are jokes that are
for a
broad
woman
that could apply to anything. Yeah.
Generic it was, woman.
Yeah, I think even the audience was like
it was
over
weird.
It because it was like by the third one, you're like, wait a minute, is it just going to be the same thing every time?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I ran into after the roast, I had a comic buddy who happened to be on the next show who was like sitting in the back and he was just like,
what the
that
fuck
was like really like that was some like fucking 1950s shit.
Right.
It was just like homophobic, sexist, racist, but not in like. The thing is,
ironic,
yeah, or
new
even
way.
Like a yeah, it wasn't there was no cleverness, it was just kind of like, let me beat you over the head with
right.
this.
I tried to explain that to the guy who put it together,
yeah,
and he didn't get it. I was like, no, it doesn't. You, if you're gonna do something super racist or cliche, you have to add a twist to it today, like you can't, but it didn't, it kind of went over his head, which was easy because he has no hair, so it just glided right over.
And I think the fact that it was like. Eight people spoke or whatever, and it was like two comedians, a couple ball players, and then just four guys that really nobody knew or right. like anything. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Or it was like, were they just performing for each other? Because, yeah, it was like when we were up there, or even like the ball players, people were so happy to see him that they were doing great. But some of the other people were just kind of like, and another thing.
So out of left field, and no pun intended.
For people who aren't comedians, if you say, you know, you're going to do like 5 to 7 minutes of jokes. they'll write like 12 pages of jokes. Some of those people are doing 20 minutes. I remember the club is like flashing the lights. Like it went so
my
long.
Palms were sweating so bad during that flashing of the light.
I was like, well, I'm going to get banned here.
Right.
By proxy.
I know it's going to reflect on me. But the reason I brought that up was because you said, did I get my signed baseball? And I did. And the baseball said something like, good job at sucking dick,
yep.
Shane Spencer. And I was kind of bummed because it came in a cool glass yeah. thing. I wanted to show my mom. I was like, oh, cool, this looks nice. And then it's just like, sucking dick. And yeah. I just, the joke continues. It's not even a joke. It's just like, really, again?
Well, that's sort of like that, you know, boys club humor of like, yeah, you would think that's like, you know, at Augusta, the Masters or something, where it's like country club humor where it's like,
well, you know,
you
what
haven't it, evolved.
Right. But you know what it kind of reminds me of? So I'm from upstate.
Yeah.
And it's very stuck in 1991. And there's a lot of women there who haven't updated their look. And it's a lot of the kind of crunchy, curly hair with straight bangs. Do you know that look?
Yeah.
Okay. So I see these people and I'm like, wondering, have you not looked in a magazine? Have you not turned on the television in 25, 30 years? And it's the same with the dudes with the jokes. Have they not seen a stand-up special once since 1920?
Like, I don't know if it's just something. I think this happens in the suburbs and stuff where kind of once you're done with college and, you know, you're out of your 20s, you kind of just stop. You're just like stuck in your ways. That's why right. people, you know, that's why the cliche of like, oh, older people are usually stuck in their ways. It's like you do.
Yeah, you do stop growing after a certain, or not even growing, but it's like your brain almost just goes, like you hit a brick wall and you can't go further.
Yeah, you're just, because you look, even now, you know, millennials and stuff, everybody's very progressive, but I can't wait for, you know, 20 years from now when even millennials are like, well, now this is too far.
Right.
It's like, wait, you were, but yeah, right. I think it's just part of getting older.
Right, and they're still wearing, I don't know, what do people wear now? I don't even know. I'm talking about looking at magazines and I have no clue.
Yeah, you're next. You're going to be...
I am next and I'm paranoid that I'm going to be... Because I graduated from high school in 2001. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably a lot older than you.
Yes, much older.
Really?
I graduated in 2008.
Ooh, it's creepy. So 2001, that's still kind of the 90s in a way.
Yeah.
And I'm so afraid that I'm going to never grow out of that look, the late 90s, early 2000s look, like the Britney Spears low-riding jeans. So I always make sure my jeans are really high.
I think they're making a comeback,
aren't they? They are, kind
of. I saw somebody tweet about that or something.
They are, but people are hoping that they're not. And so I'm just riding the they're not coming back train as long as that train will go. But I'm afraid that I will be that person who, when the low-rise jeans come back in, I'll still look like I'm wearing actual jeans from 2001, not the the 2020 version.
Not the low rise. Now with the high waisted jeans, when they came back, like young girls were wearing them, but then there were also like you would
moms
see older people wearing them who never got off that train.
Right, there's
like,
a fine line. Yeah. And some people, when they wear the really legit mom-looking jeans, still can look cool, and I'll never be one of those people. Mm. I'm going to pull my jeans all the way up over my nose, basically, and I still won't be hip. That's how high my jeans will go, and like I'll be like, am I in fashion?
Yeah, my fashion is basically whoever the last person I was dating, whatever they told me to buy, that's what I have now.
Right, well, whoever you're dating now has good taste in fashion.
Well, this sweater is probably like three girlfriends old, and these jeans are probably two. Shoes are newish.
Is that a bit?
No. But
that should be a bit.
That's
funny.
I've only gotten, because if it's up to me, I'm just buying like, you know, sports jerseys and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah. Philadelphia Eagles jerseys.
Yeah, it's embarrassing to wear in public. Yeah.
I'm a Bills fan, so I have no room to. Yeah, I have no room to speak. I said I might do a joke about you, but I won't because that's too easy. Because I was just talking about these guys being cheesy with their jokes, so I'm not going to be like, a joke I told about Patrick on the roast. So I'm going to self-edit there, which is very necessary. So let's talk about something that you'd tell your therapist if you were to go to one. Do you have a therapist?
No, I do not have a therapist. I went to therapist one time when I was a child, when I was 11 or 10 or something like that.
I feel like you spoke the same when you were 10 or 11. You sound like a business, like you sound like, I just look at you and I'm like, you were the same you are now at 11 in a way.
I was born an old man, yes. I've always been.
Yeah, I can see you being very serious and stoic.
Like, yeah, reading the sports section and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I remember I went to therapy one time. And then I got type 1 diabetes like a week later.
That's what you get for going to therapy.
Well, and it was just like, we don't have money for both of these problems.
That's
and one's
true.
More pressing. Right. So I was like, all right, well, right. I guess I'll just become a comedian later in life.
Right. Well, geez, sorry about the diabetes thing.
Yeah, you know, what can you do?
Really, what can you do? What do you do? Do you have like sugars? Like,
yeah, I got the insulin. I take shots, check my sugar, all that fun stuff.
So does that mean you can't really eat pasta and bread? And
no,
stuff?
I could because I just have to inject the right amount of insulin for it.
Before or after?
Usually before.
Don't you get a bad association with pasta? Because you're like, every time I eat pasta, I have an injection of a needle. I would think it would start tasting bad.
No, I'm so over needle. Like, needles don't bother me in the least. Like, when I go get blood drawn, because I have to go get blood work done every few months. And I just stare at the woman doing it right in the eye every time. Like, you can't, this doesn't faze me. Like, do it, take all the vials you want. I don't care.
She might turn it as a weapon if you keep staring at her like that. Super creepy.
I want to like psych out the nurses and just be like, that's right, I'm tough.
Yeah. When I was a kid and I'd get whatever shot or finger prick or something, I always wore it on my sleeve how good I was about it. I wasn't like every other kid who was whining and crying.
At first I was a little bitch about it. I didn't want to. They had a machine where they would stick a syringe in it so you could just press the button so you didn't have to actually inject yourself with it. So I had to do that at first because it was easier to just press a button and have it happen than actually do it. But yeah, after a couple months, I was like, fuck this. I got it.
We'll get to the therapy thing, but I'm curious because talking about needles and you don't seem to be bothered by them. Did you see the Elizabeth Holmes documentary?
No, I did not.
She's the one who came up with a basically fake invention. Do people even say the word invention anymore? I think we need to invent a new word for invention.
I think the last invention was probably done by Thomas Edison.
I agree.
We don't need that word anymore.
Right. Well, she called her machine the Edison, which was ironically, which she actually did. Which was like a machine to test for all sorts of problems within your blood or something in one tiny finger prick rather than doing a full vial of blood.
Yeah.
And it was a total sham. Like they couldn't actually do it. But she turned it into like a $1 billion business.
Because people are they want to avoid getting needled so badly.
Well, it was a good selling point, I think, but she got huge investors, legit people that had no idea that she was a bamboozler. She's kind of like this old school 1920s, like bamboozler. Like,
respect that. Yeah. Anybody who scams the medical industry is a friend of mine.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's, you have to be very talented.
And you have to pull that off. Balls. Like, I would,
Yeah. Well, she's definitely mentally ill, though, too.
Well, that's a lot of people's balls comes from being crazy. So.
So, anyway, that's a documentary on HBO. Okay. So, what would you tell your therapist? I feel so weird getting away from the diabetes conversation. Well, I'm going to keep bringing it back.
I would tell my therapist I have diabetes. Please help. I talked to my girlfriend about this question specifically, like, because, you know, sometimes it's tough to be introspective, which is weird because I'm a comedian and it's like certain things I can be introspective about, like dating and stuff like that. But like mental health, I feel like can be a little bit of a blind spot. But yeah, she told me that I only cry about sports is a strange thing.
You're the second guy I've known who's only cried at sport related things. I think it's okay. Because you can cry still.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try. Because I'll try to send her, like, you know, videos of something in sports that happened that made me cry. And she's just like, I don't get it. This is stupid. And I'm like, how dare you? But yeah, it's interesting to her. And I just took it for granted. I just thought this is how everyone was. But at least all sports fans. But yeah, that's how I access my emotions is through, like, sports. And I'm not even like a guy who's like, oh, I only cry once a year. Like, sports will make me cry several times a week. Like,
that's what I was going to ask. I think the question is how often you're crying from sports.
Constantly.
I can't.
It's so emotional for me. Like, because we started talking about this question today, and then I'm showing my girlfriend's videos of, like, there's this guy who got drafted over the weekend whose best friend is, like, this mentally handicapped kid he's known his entire life, and it's, like, a beautiful story about friendship.
It's magical.
But if it was if he didn't get drafted, if it was just some guy, like, I don't know if it would affect me the same way. For some reason, it relating to sports allows me to feel like I can be emotional about it, maybe.
Right. You're a guy. Do you think that's the rule for a guy? The guys can't cry? Do you feel that way?
No, I'm very much like, you should cry. It feels good to cry. Yeah. It's so damaging to just bottle that sort of stuff up. But I think the fact that when I was a kid, all sports was basically my whole life. Like, I played, every season was a new sport, football, baseball, basketball, soccer. Like, that's what, you know, my dad and mom taking me to practice. That's what we talked about. Like, it was always sports. Yeah. On the weekends, we watched sport. Like, that was always the thing. So I think I'm just more comfortable there.
I get it because I grew up as a Buffalo Bills fan.
A lot of anguish there.
I've seen my brother cry over the Bills many times. It's such a part of your soul when that's what you do. My life was going to Bills games with my dad. My memories are so tied into beautiful things surrounding the Buffalo Bills. And then I grew up dancing. And so I feel like, so my friend Jen, who I always referred to on the show, called Resident Consultant Jen, because she's going to be a doctor soon. So, she and I both grew up dancing. And when we see videos of people dancing, or like, so you think you can dance, like a cheesy dance competition show, she gets more emotional than I do, but we both get emotional. And it won't even be a sad song. It'll just be a beautiful something is happening surrounding the idea of performing and dancing.
Yeah.
And I get emotional. So I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's just something you relate to so strongly that it can tap into.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it's even something we think about, but I think most people just don't want to cry just because it's such a production. So it's like,
you think it's a production. We've got makeup to deal with.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
You
might have to go home afterward. Well, you shouldn't be crying in public, but
exactly.
If you are.
Yeah, but like, you know, your nose is runny and you're feeling things, and it's just a nuisance on the day for the most part. So you try to, like, you as a defense mechanism, you're kind of like, all right, not everything can make me cry, but then there are certain things where it's like, oh,
yeah,
it sneaks in every time.
Okay, so what if your mom died and wasn't carrying a football? Would you still cry?
I think mom would be tough. That's up there. I was the only two times I've seen my dad cry was when we were going to his mom's funeral, and then when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, my stepmom, like, sneakily recorded him on her phone,
good.
And he cried like a baby, which made me so happy.
I love that.
Yeah, but so that I feel like mom dying would still get it.
Sans sports, like that's the one scenario.
My mom is also a big sports fan, so
okay. So then it'll be part of you losing sports too at the same time. But that's obviously the small, minute part of your mom dying.
Yeah.
But I really kind of wanted to say, if you, I should have said, if you like lost your dog, would your dog have to be playing football?
Well, that was another thing I wrote down as a possible thing.
Okay.
I've never really had an attachment with dogs.
Mm.
And I feel like people think that's weird about me.
I don't think that's weird, but I think it's surprising because when you entered this apartment where we're taping, there is a dog.
Yes.
And you handled yourself very well.
Well, I was a dog walker for a year.
Okay.
But
you know how to make them not bite you.
Yeah. Basically. And we always had dogs growing up, like dogs and cats, whatever. So I'm fine with animals, but I see the way people love dogs. I'm like, I do not feel that even a little bit. Like I appreciate them as animals, but I'm not going to like have it lick my face or like, you know, cuddle with
or
it or
butt.
Anything. Yeah. I'm not, no licking of anything.
You should.
Okay. Well,
it makes it all worth it. All the vet appointments, all the money.
Get some peanut butter back there. But yeah, I've never really had, it's more of like just something I don't understand, the way how much other people can love.
Have you ever had an animal or a pet?
Yeah, I always had pets.
Did you say that? I think you said that.
Yeah,
I'm a good listener.
And it just wasn't like, I liked having them around, but it wasn't like a bond where, you know, like
you might be a sociopath.
Yeah, it could be.
But also, no, not at the same time. But yeah, I feel like I get it on both perspectives of everything, and I wish I didn't. I wish I could just be like, yeah, you're a sociopath, you should be obsessed with dogs, and yes, you're a sociopath, you should be able to cry at everything else besides sports. But I get that if it's just not hitting you in the heart, you can't force it to, and it's not going to.
That's, and I remember feeling that way as a kid, because I wasn't there was like things that I would see other people getting emotional about, and I would just kind of be not responding to it. I'm like, oh, this is weird. Like, should I just do what everybody else is doing?
But then that would be even more sociopathic.
Yeah, that's, and it's also just, especially now at this point in my life, I'm like, I don't like care to fake it. And I feel like people, especially my friends, can kind of see through if I'm just pretending to care. They're like, what are you doing? This isn't you. I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to blend in with society for a minute.
Oh, you blend in. You're very, very boring.
Yeah. No. I try to stay silent. Just a lot of drab clothes. Keep it very basic.
Yeah. So how about if you had a child?
Okay.
Would you cry at that moment? And not just because the baby was going to take up a lot of sports watching time.
Having a child would mean a lot to me. I love children. I do like children.
Interesting.
A lot. Yeah.
That you like kids. But
well,
not...
this, you know what? This is actually perfect. I can't believe I didn't think about this for what I want to tell my therapist. I've always wanted to be a mother.
That's amazing.
I've always wanted to, I feel
it's
bad.
Perfect. I've always wanted to be a father. We should be a couple.
I feel bad that I won't get to grow life inside of me. That seems like the biggest part of being a human being.
That's like the ultimate, if you could grow sports inside you connection. Oh, you know, like if you grew football in you.
Oh my God, it just gave birth to a little football. I would love it so much.
Definitely so much more than an actual baby. Okay, something I would tell my therapist is, a friend of mine said, do you ever get jealous of your therapist's other patients? And I kind of realized I do.
Why?
Like they're cheating on me.
Oh.
Like I should be the only patient.
Because you feel like your bond with your therapist is such that she couldn't, what she gives to you, if she gave it to somebody else, it would make you feel bad?
Yeah. It'd be like my husband. Not that I have one.
Well,
I don't have a therapist
husband,
either.
And then you pointed. I was like, is there a husband in the next room?
The ghost of my husband. I murdered him, which is much easier for me because he's always on time because he's always here.
Well,
so
we'll miss him. Rest
in peace. But it feels a little bit like a cheating scenario. And then you want to be the most special patient or the most special person they see. And so I found myself, and I really don't have a therapist and I have not been a long time, but this is referring back to a long time ago. But I've found myself performing in a way for my therapist because I really want to be their coolest, best, most, not entertaining patient, but their most endearing patient.
Yeah, you want to be loved by them. Well, I think that also comes from doing comedy. I know all of my friends are comedians who go to therapy because the most comedians. I probably need therapy, but
you definitely do.
I'm so tired of talking. Like, between comedy and podcasts, every second I have to not speak. Like, my girlfriend would be like, why are you so quiet? I'm like, I've been talking for 5 days straight. But I feel like my friends definitely have anxiety over performing for their therapist, like not boring them, like wanting to, you know, do well, like it's a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have one friend who he thinks his therapist hates him and it gives him anxiety. He's like, she's just rude to me. I don't get it.
And that's probably why he's going back to Winter
Over.
But
yeah, we're like, yeah, go get another one. He's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, it's like a room you bombed in. You want to go back and kill. Yeah.
And conquer. I bring a mic into my therapist.
You just like walk in, go right into a material.
Yes. But I never talk to a therapist without a microphone.
I feel like some at open mics, I'll see people and it feels like they're workshopping material for their therapists. So it's like, this isn't even really comedy. You're just trying to work something out here.
Right.
And so you don't look, so you don't have to work it out in your therapist.
Yeah. See that. If I told my therapist that, I think I would, I think I'd be too uncomfortable to tell my therapist that I felt that way.
Yeah.
I think I can be so honest and then just stop being honest. I couldn't break that barrier and let them know that I'm jealous of their patients.
Yeah. And once you, once you reveal that part of yourself, it's like, well, I'm not gonna, this is the stuff I'm going to complain about now. Yeah. I'm not going back.
Yeah. I wish that therapists could somehow seem less human. It's like impressing a mother. Or like, I don't want to go to my friend's house and have their mom think I'm wretched. So I'm always going to put on the best face for them because they're a human.
You can't be truly honest because it, on some level, they are a person. You don't want them to think you're crazy or like a loser.
Right.
Like,
How far can I push the honest thing?
You
want to
work on stuff, but without coming off in a certain way. I could definitely see myself doing that in there, like not really revealing a whole truth because I would be nervous how they would think of me because they're still a person, like even though they see a ton of shit.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anyone can talk to without angling what they're saying in a certain way, if you could just talk.
Especially, like I just know from doing comedy, when I tell stories, like I'll purposely leave stuff out to make it either funnier or to make me look better or like you're not going to be truly
honest. It's your agenda.
Yeah. Cause it's your version of it. You're the narrator of it.
Yeah. I wonder what that would be like to just talk freely without trying to have an angle on something. Cause I'm trying to think of someone that I would be just 100%
maybe
myself.
Like, what if you kept a diary or something, but then you're worried somebody finds it. And
exactly.
You look nuts. It's like,
well, it's also, hey guys, it's Kristen. So I don't know who else it would be. But so as you know, I edit these podcasts. And as I'm sitting here listening to this, I don't know how I jump from writing something in a diary to what I'm about to say, which is how I need to say my Jeopardy answers out loud, even if I'm watching the show alone. So just go with it. I was hoping to add in some sort of natural transition of like, this is why I brought it up. But I have no idea what I was thinking. So anyway, now on to me talking about needing to say Jeopardy answers out loud. When I watch Jeopardy, if I'm alone and I know the answer, I'll still say the answer out loud.
Oh.
Even though I'm the only one there, I'm the only one who needs to know that I got it right.
I think about that all the time because my mom and her husband will watch Jeopardy like when I go home, and they'll both like call out the answers even when they don't know them. They'll just yell out guesses.
Oh yeah, that's me and my dad every night.
But I know the answers, but I'm like, I don't want it to seem like I need the like I overthink it. I'm like, it's weird that I need the validation of saying the right answer. Who cares? So I don't say anything. But it's
wow,
tough.
That's secure. That's some level of confidence that I don't think I will ever reach.
Well, I'm sure if I was trying to impress somebody, I would like, if I was watching it, you know, with a girl I liked or something, I'm sure I would definitely say it.
But don't you want to impress your mom and your stepdad?
I mean, she loves me and I don't really care what he does. So,
well, so I'm staying at my parents right now and I'm every night watching Jeopardy. It's like Rain Man would say Wapner's on every he's like, Wapner, got to watch Wapner. I'm like, Jeopardy, got to watch Jeopardy. And so I watch it every night basically with my parents and I shout out the answer so loud. And I double say it. So if the answer is Malaysia, I would definitely not know the answer if it was Malaysia.
What was the question?
For the record, yeah, I don't know. If it's Malaysia, I'll say Malaysia. And then the other people will buzz in. And then I'll say Malaysia again to confirm
that you got
that
it,
I
right.
got it. Yeah. And then I'll look at my dad and my mom. And I'm incredibly annoying, but it's more of a joke. But also, I really need to say it almost twice every time. Every now and then I'll say it once when I'm pretty sure they definitely heard me. But I'll go, thank you, like when I get it right. And so I overdo it. And I've never felt smart.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I need to.
It's definitely something because it is. I would do the same thing initially. It's just like, of course, you're watching Jeopardy, you yell at the answer. And also sometimes there's a bar I go to in Brooklyn, and they'll put Jeopardy on the big TV with the sound for like 7 o'clock or whenever it comes on, and everyone at the bar is yelling out answers. It's like it's just like a response that people they wanna prove
it's a reflex.
They can answer, but it's
yeah.
And I also think I'm more afraid of just like how stupid you look when you get the answer wrong.
Oh my God, I'm so over that. I yell out the stupidest things. It will have nothing to do with the answer at all. And I'll still, just in case, just throw it out there. So it's like, you're going to miss all the shots you don't take. You can relate to that because that's a sports thing.
I would rather not take any shots and just have people think, oh,
maybe he's quietly smart and just doesn't want to brag. Right.
Because I'm definitely not smart. If I was shouting out, it would not be a good percentage that I was getting right. So I'd rather just have them think like, oh, maybe not. Maybe once in a while, if I'm like positive, I'll just like turn to somebody and say it, but not yell it out. You want to like maintain a cool confidence.
You do.
During Jeopardy.
You do. My goal is to get to the point where when I do well at Jeopardy, my parents don't look at me with surprise. They're not like, oh, how did you know that? Like, I want them to just be like, of course she knows that.
Really? Do you think you'll ever get to that
no,
point?
Yeah, never. No.
My mom knows me too well. She would, like, she knows what categories I would do well at.
And yeah.
If I answered, if out of nowhere I was just yelling out Malaysia things, she'd be like, what? Where did you go?
Right.
That you learned about Malaysia.
Right. Or how are you Googling this quickly?
Yes.
That's the skill to get. That's what James has been doing. He's just secretly Googling.
Well, it was an episode of like Full House or Family Matters or something where somebody taped Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah.
And then like watched it the next day with their family and got all the answers right.
Yeah, I've thrown that idea around so many times. I've never stooped that low, but it's been in my head.
Well, with the DVR now, you could get away with
it. Oh, you can. Ugh. Plus, you know, my parents, they have no concept of what time it is ever. So I could just be like, oh, yeah, it's 7:30. It's time for Jeopardy. And it's actually 4 p.m.
It's like, oh, yeah. Just woke up.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's move on to Socially Challenged.
Socially Challenged.
When you came over, I started talking to you about some annoyances that I have with social meanderings. And I'm wondering about you, because you seem to respond in a way that I would respond. Do you have friends?
I have a few friends who are my friends because I can be openly rude to them and they don't take it personal. Like I don't like riding the train with people.
Oh,
like
I hate riding the train with people.
If me and my friend are going to the same place, like we live kind of close to each other. If we're meeting somewhere, they might be like, hey, could we, I'm just like, I'm not in the mood to ride the train, and they get it. But you know, other people who I'm not as good of friends with would take offense to that. Even my girlfriend would definitely take offense to that, but I have to just suck it up and ride
the
train.
She's like, you don't want to ride this train?
Yes,
that was
she
really
does.
Stupid. That was like a roast joke.
She is very
guys.
Sassy in that way.
Yeah.
But so I have like made up excuses for why I like couldn't ride the train back with her somewhere. I'm like, oh, I got to go do this and I'll meet up with you later. Like, I just don't, if it's like, especially she's in Astoria and I'm in Brooklyn, if it's like an hour plus train ride, I want to listen to like a podcast or something. I want to have that time to myself. I don't have to like sit there and just like think of conversation or just like be bored or something.
I hate having this in common with you because I feel like I have to prove that I'm actually the same way that you are without just being like, oh yeah, just because you're on my podcast, I'm agreeing with you. I'm truly just like that.
Yeah.
And it's to a dangerous degree where I keep myself really isolated because of that kind of stuff. And today I drove down to the city and I had a phone call that I had to be on. It was an hour long phone call. Mm-hmm. And I like to drive and just zone out. I hate talking on the phone when I'm driving. Yeah. I hate talking on the phone ever.
For an hour. That's
but
brutal.
It was a set hour. And I had to do some serious mental prepping beforehand, but I was pissed.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is the time that I actually enjoy. I never enjoy anything ever, but I enjoy sitting in a car, driving, not talking to anyone, either listening to music or usually I actually don't listen to podcasts very often, which is kind of ironic. It's like, I talk enough. I don't need to hear other people talk. It's like, they're just another one of me. No thanks. You know? So I like to have that time. So the drive down is about 3 hours. Yeah. And I only had 2 hours to myself. And I was like, God damn it.
You had to give up an hour.
Yeah, I did. And it sucks. It really, really, really sent me to like a bad mood.
Well, before I moved to the city, when I had a car, driving was so important to me. Like I would just go drive for no reason. Like, especially after, like if there was a game the Eagles lost or something, if I was in a bad mood, I'd just go drive around for an hour and it would cheer me up. Like, just, it felt good to sort of zone out on, just focus on driving, maybe, you know, music or something. But just like, it's a way to sort of just be on your own in your own thing. And obviously I don't have a car here, but the subway is that sort of thing. It's like, if you get your podcast in, there's so many times where I've just been like zoning out on the train, listening to something on my own. It's like, I don't even realize there's like Showtime dancers about to kick me in the head. Right. And like, you know, crazy ladies throwing things in my direction. Like the, right. That's the, I think it's definitely important to have that time.
It's almost close to a meditation in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just how deep you can get into it sometimes, where you're just like, oh yeah, there's like crazy homeless people around me and school just let out and it's packed in here, but you just don't even think about it after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, the equivalent of that to me, the riding with someone on the subway, which is pure torture, the equivalent is going to eat at a walk-up place where you order at the counter and you have to stand in line with an acquaintance or someone you don't totally know well. Mm. And just have this conversation leading up to the menu and then you can order. It's, I've experienced it when I've done little, like I have a little meeting with someone or something. Yeah. For some bullshit thing and I don't know the person and they pick a spot where we both have to stand in line together. We have to make the small talk in the line.
Small talk is
in the line.
Brutal, yeah.
I'm like, just let me stand here and order my food and I'll come meet you at the table and be much more well adjusted.
Yeah. I'm weird about the same shit like that. So I went to a bar to watch the basketball game last night by myself, and I'm sitting there watching, and about an hour in or so, I realized a guy is sitting next to me, and he's like, we're both yelling about the Sixers, sort of, but like, we're alone, so we're not like really yelling, we're just kind of like, him grunting at the same stuff that I'm mad about, but it's like, I'm not going to turn and look.
And now
I don't,
be best friends.
Because I don't want to talk to anybody.
You're opening the floodgate. If you turn.
Especially sports weirdos is such a specific kind of weirdo where they, and it's like, I want to watch the game.
I love how you call them the weirdo, but you're the one crying all the
time
over
it. I'm also a sports weirdo, yeah. So I know. Yeah. I don't want somebody talking to me like while I'm trying to watch the game, so I don't really look over. And then like at some point his girlfriend comes or whatever. And then as I'm going to leave, like after the game, I'm like walking out and I look at the guy. I'm like, wait a minute. I know this guy. Like this guy is, I've watched games with him before at a different bar. Like,
so you're
I
just
know
a dick
guy.
Ignoring a guy.
He was,
you know,
another comic, but he was doing the same thing to
right.
me. I messaged him this morning. I was like, hey, were you watching the game here? Cause I still wasn't sure. And I didn't want to be like, hey, are you Tommy? And have him be like, no, but I like the Sixers. And then I'm like,
right. And now here we are married.
So I just didn't say anything to him the whole time. And I messaged him this morning, like, hey, were you at this bar watching the game? He's like, yeah, were you there? Like, he was the same way as me, where neither of us wanted to interact.
There's that unwritten feeling you have sometimes with someone. And it's always the best feeling when we're both aware that we kind of know each other and we both do not feel like getting into it. And it's almost like we don't nod to each other, but there's almost an unphysical nod that you give each other of like, we're not doing this.
Yep.
And it's this wonderful pact.
I love that moment where you recognize somebody on the train and they have their headphones in, you have your headphones in, you just like give a little nod, but nobody's coming to anybody.
Nope. It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
And interestingly enough, those are the people you probably would want to talk to because they're probably cool.
Because they get it. Yeah, right. They get it. You're like,
Right. Whereas the person who's like, comes over, starts talking, you're like, oh geez.
I've had people come up to me like, like, oh, you were the comedian at the show we were just at. I'm like, what? Why? Why would you think I wanted to talk
right.
on the train?
Right.
I'm like, but I, you know, you can't be a dick.
You can't, but
as much as I'd like to.
But you can.
I feel like I probably can come off as a dick, but I do try my best to not be rude.
You know, I don't like talking on the train, part of because of the whole social thing, but then the other part is really bad lighting. And I just don't know, like, if I have something in my nose, if it makes me look like I have mustache hair. I don't know what that lighting does to my face.
Yeah.
And so I get very uncomfortable.
It is a little, it can be very,
it's harsh.
Very well lit. It's got that cafeteria lighting.
Yeah, you'd think maybe they'd crank it down just a slight
do a little
bit.
Mood lighting.
Yeah.
At least in the evenings.
Yeah, get people feeling it. You know, if they're if you're on a date
jazz.
With someone sitting on that bright train, you just had two drinks and you're looking, like, tired. Yeah. And that's a date killer.
I'm going to say, how many people haven't got laid because the MTA has harsh lighting in there?
Probably more than we'd like to recognize.
I blame the MTA for all
I
my
do
problems.
Too. I do too.
Anything that happens, it's their fault.
So the friends that you do have, how do you have them?
I don't know. I'm not awful. Because
you don't keep in touch, as you were saying before we started taping. Like, you're not the one... Well, because I said some people reach out too often.
Yeah.
And you said, if I have friends like that, then we can't be friends.
It's funny because I just, the two guys I do the podcast with, one of them, we have like a group text. And we're really good friends. We'll hang out. And, you know, we usually talk every day. But we hadn't heard from him in like 5 days. And we were finally like, and the podcast hadn't been posted. And that's when he does it. So it was like, we're like, we should probably check in, right?
He's probably dead.
Well, he just like had been working a lot, and he was also like, yeah, I was just tired of looking at my phone. I needed a break from it. I'm like, yeah, that's great. I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not, it did take me like 5 days to realize, like, oh, I haven't heard from, you know, one of my best friends who I talk to every day normally.
See, that's even for me a lot. I tend to go long stretches if the person doesn't reach out to me.
Yeah.
And has no reflection on our friendship. Of me, how much I care about them. I mean, maybe it does, like, a little bit, but if I don't hear from a good friend, it's been a month. I'm like, okay, that's pretty normal because I don't really live in the same area as a lot of my friends. So it's not an everyday touch-in thing.
My friends that I grew up with who I don't live near anymore, it's more of that, but it's like, yeah, this guy is somebody, he lives two blocks away from me. Like, well, we hang out all the time. So it was weird that I hadn't heard from him to the point where I was kind of like, yeah, if he was going to die, it probably would have been like this. Like, it probably would have been just me not hearing from him for 5 days.
Right.
And then all of a sudden.
And then your neighborhood smells really bad for some
like,
reason.
Wait, yeah, check that apartment.
Yeah, it's a rotting corpse. So what does it do to your friendship living close to someone you're friends with?
I love a hangout that's not, I don't, especially now that I'm in a relationship, I don't want to like, go out to a bar and try to meet people or anything. Comedy is enough socializing.
Oh,
for
yeah.
me. That's
yeah.
fine because it happens in bars. It happens in clubs. You talk. It's fine. I like having a friend who lives close that could just hang out at our apartments and watch a game together.
Like sitcom close where it's just like
yes.
the door
yeah.
opens.
No,
and
yeah,
could be
I
them.
Literally, I used to, the guy I was talking about who I thought died, I used to live in the basement at that apartment and I would just go upstairs and we would just watch like movies all the time, TV shows, games like that. That's good for me.
That's a good pop-in. There's good pop-ins and bad pop-ins.
Well, it's very specific type of personality where it's like we can both put up with each other for that long of time without butting heads. I'm not really that argumentative, although there's people who would say otherwise, but I'm not. Yeah. I feel like I've always had a friend where we can hang out a lot more than normal, I would think. And we don't really fight or argue or get sick of each other.
I don't really have friends that I fight with. I don't know if that means I'm not close enough.
No, I don't think
with
so.
My friends, or I'm just amazing.
I don't think so for that. Either.
Pretty sure it's the latter. Yeah.
No, I don't think, cause I don't really fight, but I have friends that after a while, I'm just like, I can't be around you anymore. Like,
yeah. There's definitely people if they're pushing too hard to be really friendly and be around a lot, I definitely distance myself.
Yeah.
But I have close friends that I feel really close with, but I don't have, I have friends, like I have friends that I feel like I can be rude with, which are the best.
Yeah.
But I don't really fight with anyone, which really makes me wonder, am I not being real enough? Should we be fighting with, like, are you not close enough with your friend if you never have fights or arguments?
I think it's open to what you consider closeness to be.
I mean, obviously something very wrong if I consider it fighting.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, because I've never been like a fight with friends guy. I have friends that I disagree with, and we have gotten in arguments and fights, but it's always like you're making fun of it as it happens.
Right.
It's not like such a huge deal that I've ever not talked to somebody.
Yeah, and it would be weird or awkward afterward.
Yeah, or I stop being friends with somebody.
I don't think I would ever fight with anyone like that either. I don't want to make it sound like I'm some like over caffeinated angry bitch who's just like, yeah, bitch. But almost, I think maybe because I'm lacking honesty, like for example, so where we're taping right now, it's my friend's apartment. Mm-hmm. And she can be flaky.
Yeah.
And she almost backed out of letting me come here to do this. And I wouldn't have fought with her about it. I would have just let it go. And that's why I wonder, am I being a pushover?
Well, do you think you would have let it go because you're like, well, that's so-and-so. She is
that's
this,
her. Yes. That's why her. I let it go.
I have the other guy I do the podcast with who is just notorious for being late. All the time, will tell you he's going to be on time, still late. That's who he is. That's who he was. He's always been that way. Like, it would be weirder for me, I think, to allow it to get me upset when that's just who people are.
Great point.
You can't just try to fix people or mold them to be the way you want them. It's like if they're your friend, you accept that part about them.
Right.
You know, as long as they're not, like, violent or, you know, some crazy shit, but yeah, you just accept people's flaws.
Yeah, my friend, resident consultant Jen, who I referred to a little while ago, she knows I'm late. That's just, she's very aware of it. We've known each other since we were young. Her mom was always late, and so it was almost like I was similar to her mom, and it just was a thing she didn't mind. So the other night, I was gonna go to her place, and I said I'm leaving in 20 minutes, and then in 20 minutes, I texted her I'm in the car, and she just wrote, "Wow."
Yeah, so unexpected.
So I love that, you know, there's no formality. It's like just getting called on your shit is so important in friendship.
Definitely.
So if you could have one friend that doesn't know you, this is a weird question. Who would it be?
Like a famous person?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've never asked this before. I don't know why I just asked that. I'll probably edit this out.
Who do I have? Like a man crush?
Yeah.
On?
Yeah. It's like, that's like a cool guy.
I've always liked Michael Vick. He seems like a cool guy.
Oh yeah. That's why you don't like dogs. So you guys would relate.
Well, I think that's part of why I wasn't that upset with him. But
obviously
I've always wanted to meet him. There's some people I thought of that it's like, if I met them, cause I've met, like, you know, you meet some famous people and
as we do,
I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's
well,
fine.
I just was saying this the other day. I met Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I don't care about him.
Yeah.
And I said, I wish I could meet someone that I was excited by. I've met celebrities that I told him when I met him, you're not, and I wasn't being a dick. I just said, you're not intimidating at all. And it was more because I didn't put him on a pedestal because I didn't know him, and he didn't intimidate me the way I thought a big wrestler guy would.
If I met Stone Cold Steve Austin, I would cry and...
You would? Okay.
I would be. Okay. He was like, but because that was a, you know, when I was a fucking 8-year-old boy, he was like the coolest guy in the world. So that would, yeah. That's
and now
somebody,
that you're like a 29-year-old boy, 29, right?
29, yes.
He's still the coolest.
He's still, I mean, I do follow him on Twitter and Instagram.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I called him Cold Stone accidentally, not on purpose.
People do. Mike Tyson famously did that in a press conference before they were about to wrestle and called him Cold Stone.
Oh my God. Poor Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
What a nerd.
I think he's used to that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So last part of the show, we'll chit chat about stuff that kind of annoys us, which we already did, but that's just the nature of, I think, who we are.
We're both very easily annoyed.
Yes. Incredibly annoyed. So, did you write something down? What was your thing you were going
to say? Well, this happened to me after a show this weekend, I was meeting a friend of a friend who had seen the show, and she came in for a high five.
Mm.
And I just like stuck my hand out like for a handshake or whatever. She's like, no, high five. I'm like, I gotta be honest, I'm not doing a high five. I don't like high fives. I don't like hugs. I don't even really like handshakes or fist pounds. Like, I think we should just, we see each other, we can acknowledge
a nod
it.
Is sufficient.
That's fine. I hate like my girlfriend's roommate, who I don't really know that well. He had been out of town and then he came.
Oh, it's a he.
Yeah. And he came back and he was like, oh, hey, great to see you. And I could tell he was coming in for like a greeting, and I just stuck my hand out. He's like, no, hug. And I'm just like, oh,
yeah.
But I know it's not, because some people's personality is just like, no, I'm hugging because I'm showing you affection. And but it's like, for some people, that affection is just so off-putting that it doesn't have the intended.
Doesn't translate.
Yeah. It's like, I know you're trying to be good. Like my friends are huggers, and they'll see me and I don't want to hug them. They're like, no, come on, I'm hugging you. I'm like, you're making me uncomfortable. Please stop. You have to stop hugging.
Well, I'm a pushover with the hugs, I think, too. Like, I think I mentioned before, I'm a pushover with not fighting with people. If someone goes in for a hug, I'll do the hug. I never initiate the hug, but I never object. I'm very proud of you for objecting.
Well, I don't object. I give the hug and complain the whole time.
It was the high five you objected
to. High five.
I'm not embarrassing myself in public with a high five.
It's especially, she was like this, like, you know, bubbly young girl who just, any bubbly personality really bothers me.
Of course.
Up front.
Bring her down to earth. Pop those bubbles.
I don't want to. And she was like so excited. She had just seen a comedy show. She was like, oh my God, you're crazy. I was like, I just can't.
Yeah. I think if you don't have your personality and you have her personality, they have no concept of what it's like to not have that personality.
Yeah.
Like, people don't interact like that all the time.
I always try to give the benefit of the doubt to people. Like, that's who they are. Most people don't mean anything, any harm, any bad, but.
Did you see that clip? It was a while ago now, of Kesha trying to hug Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes.
Yeah. That was, I mean, Jerry's notoriously a dick, but that was the best response ever. And Kesha totally deserved it, because it's almost a power trip thing where Kesha's like, I own you. It, you know, when someone goes up to you like that, it's like they put you in the, like, a vulnerable spot a little bit, and they show that they have prowess. It's like, I'm going to tell you how we're going to greet.
Yes.
And then, you know, and that's why I feel like a pushover, because I'll just go with it. But if I could, I would always do the Jerry hug.
Well, I feel,
or the Jerry non-hug.
I think if you were put in Seinfeld's position, where for, you know, the last
25
years
fame,
or whatever,
success.
Everybody who meets you wants to, like, meet you and have a moment with you. I'm sure he's just so over it. He's, like, able to be blunt, just like, no, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember there was that movie Comedian, the documentary that he did, where somebody's like shaking, comes up to meet him at a table while he's eating and like shakes his hand and then says hi and then goes to leave and wants to shake his hand again. He's like, no, we already shook hands.
It's like, true. Like, you want to, like, say that we did already shake hands. It's not necessary.
But it's like people. Yeah. After one of the clubs I work, it's like the people leaving the show. Everyone goes by the bar where the comics are sitting after the show. And it's gotten to the point where I can't even, after the show's over, I can't even, when I know they're, like, when they're filing out, I don't go to the bar. I just hide in the showroom, because I can't, that wave of people who, because it's like people are very excited after the show.
You're
going to
be a very bad famous person.
I don't think I'm in any danger of being a famous person. And I see, like, my friends who, you know, are the other comedians on the show, they're much better at, like, talking to people and, like, follow me on Instagram and do all this shit.
Doesn't
it
disappoint you? Because they're supposed to be comedians. It's like they shouldn't have aspect to them.
I'm impressed by that, because I understand it's
I'm bitter
necessary
by it
thing.
Because I wish I had it.
Yeah. I am definitely a little bitter about it, but I realize that's my own just inability to suck it up and do it. And sometimes I will do it, and then I'll just have such a bad experience talking to somebody that I'm like, well, I'm not doing that again for another week.
You're like, I'm not going to do another podcast for another week, even though you have one again tonight.
Yeah.
This is going to put
leave this to go do it. I'm going to be all talked out.
Good. That means I did my job. I don't have a job. I can't say that.
Well, you definitely.
No,
you,
I don't have.
You
no.
got a lot out of me. So that you.
Did I?
Yeah. I feel like I've talked more than I thought I was going to.
Am I easy to talk to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to be easy to talk to. I don't like to listen, though, which is interesting.
No, that's fine.
The irony, though.
Because.
Like, talk to me, but I'm not going to listen to what you're saying.
But you're also a comedian, so you're also trying to get to your next thing, especially.
Of course.
I know from doing my podcast. Luckily, I have two other hosts, but I will definitely, like, tune out what's happening so I can gather my thought for a joke or for where I think the conversation should go next, and I'll just like completely miss something somebody said and take it, and it's like, yeah,
I know. I try really hard not to do that. I try to stay in the moment, but on stage, if I'm doing stand up, my head is never in the joke that I'm telling now, because I'm always afraid that I'm gonna forget my next jokes.
Yeah.
And I have nightmare. I don't even do that much stand up right now at all. But I'll still have nightmares of forgetting my set. I'll get on stage and I always forget my set. So whenever I'm doing stand-up, I'm robotically reciting the joke. In my mind, I'm already on to what the next joke is, so I don't forget it.
I'll like do this weird self-sabotage thing where as I'm telling a joke sometimes, I'll just be like, you're in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You're in your head. You're not
telling
the joke.
Oh my God, I do it all the time.
What's the word? Like trying to fuck with myself, and then eventually you just tune it out again. But yeah, it is weird to be talking and not really be paying attention to what you're saying because you're so in your head about where you're going.
I started to relate to stutterers because of that.
Yeah.
Because I'd be on stage saying to myself, don't mess up this word, don't mess up this word. And all of a sudden I'd stutter out that word.
Because you were so focused on it.
Yeah. Because I always wondered how just speak today, Junior, you know, but I totally get it.
That's why it's like sometimes you do need to just have a drink or something before you go on stage, just sort of loosen it up so you're not
take off that edge. I know,
fucking in your own head.
You know what I took before, which I heard was recommended, or I heard recommended by Dr. Drew. Great. I'm not going to even know the name. perfect. That was a great recommendation.
Thank you, Dr. Drew.
It's, what the heck is it? I'm going to edit it in.
Okay.
Hey, hi. Hi, guys. I am editing it in. It's propranolol, a beta blocker. Okay, now back to your regularly scheduled program. That's really hard to say, by the way, regularly scheduled. I had to tape that about 5 times. Okay. It's a something, but it just blocks the adrenaline from like going in your brain or something.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see that helping.
And it really did help because I don't want to lose control, but I also want to get out of my head. And whatever that was, which I will insert here. Propranolol, I recommend that highly.
Well, I am so just used to the adrenaline rush that it's like, I love that feeling when you're off stage, but you're still like wound up and it's going to take like a little time to calm
down.
But you still, especially like I love like if you have a good set and you walk off stage and like, the energy in the room is so high and I just walk off stage like stone face. Like, that's right. I did my job. Like,
yeah.
But it's like inside, you're just like
elated.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I live for that.
Yeah. That's well, nice. At the roast, when we did the roast, I got a standing ovation.
Yeah. You were great.
Not trying to brag, but I wasn't expecting it at all. Not that I had much competition. No offense to the other guys I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But afterward I tried to act like I'd gotten a standing ovation, but like I just tried to play it cool, but that threw me off, and I was trying to really act like it didn't faze me, but that was really exciting for me.
Yeah,
but I didn't want it to look exciting for me.
Well, no, because you want to be like, oh yeah, this happens all the time.
All of a sudden I start doing cartwheels. Like, no, thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great time.
I'm really bad at the wrap-up part of this.
Oh, okay.
With the what's your Twitter handle and what's your Instagram? Like, that's what I was saying. I'm bitter to other comics who can do that comfortably. I can't do it comfortably.
You can't. See, that I can get into a little bit. I can schmooze a little bit.
You can. I think I can too if I want to.
But it's your own thing, so you're not like
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So how, if this was your podcast?
Well, I would tell everybody that they could follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Shrotime, S-C-H-R-O time, and listen to my podcast, The Good, The Dad, and The Ugly on iTunes and Spotify.
And I can't believe you're the ugly part of the podcast.
I think it's more of a personality
thing. They must be very handsome.
No.
This is not me hitting on you. You're just not ugly.
Well, thank you. That is a common theme, and people think I do it just so I can get compliments.
Right.
But it's more of how our personalities are. Like the one
that makes sense.
One's a very sweet young man. The other's more like a fatherly protector of us, and I'm sort of like the...
You're dead inside.
The, yeah.
And you're rotting, so that's definitely ugly.
I'm definitely the least liked one of our podcasts. When we get fan mail, it's always like, you two are great, and you let Patrick hang out, and that's nice. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to call myself the ugly from now on, because I really am desperate for compliments.
It's we're taking over the world. The uglies. It's our time.
So thank you for so comfortably giving out your show information and Instagram and Twitter handles, because I clearly can't do it. After the show, there's a little thing from my Uncle Tony.
Ooh.
who does Tough Love with Uncle Tony.
Okay.
So could you just take one moment and just respond to whatever Tony said with agreeance, if that's a word?
Okay, yeah. I mean, anybody named Tony, I'm on board with, especially when he's tough. Tony, don't be too tough, but I liked what you had to say. And I'll keep it in mind as I go forward in my life. Thanks, Tone. Love you, Tony.
That's awesome. That was really good. That was almost too good. I did not warn you about that either.
Oh, I'll say anything.
Good,
I'm ready
fly.
To go.
On the fly. All right. Well, stay tuned for Tough Love with Uncle Tony. And if you guys want to support the show, please do. It's how I survive. Go to patreon.com/KristenAndChill. And you can also rate the show if you have an extra 2 seconds. Hit 5 stars on iTunes, and you can follow me on Instagram at Chris Karn and on Twitter at Kristen Carney. That was so goddamn smooth. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Nailed
how
it.
Smooth that was. Yeah. So thanks again for listening and for being awesome. And remember, stay bored enough to listen, but not too bored. Bye, guys.
All right. My daughter's getting bullied and she's showing signs that it's really bringing her down. What should I do? All right. Well, I don't know. I don't got a daughter, but I got you. You're my niece. If somebody's bullying you, it's pretty easy. You pull them aside, just gentle-like. Here you go. Have a seat. Look at my face. You say anything, you do anything, you touch any part of my niece that hurts her in any fucking way, I fucking bury you. I put a goddamn bullet in your head, and you're done. Now listen. Make sure when you say this shit that somebody doesn't have their internet phones going so they're recording it or Skypes or whatever. Because you can get arrested for that shit. Just explain to them. Tell the bully, who, by the way, is going to be a colossal cunt later on. They're not going to get any better, I promise you that. The good news is the revenge will always be. Think about all these bullies in high school or whatever. Guess what? They're on their 9th marriage. They're fucking miserable as fuck. Listen, in the end, that's how it works. It's like a giant X. You start to ascend, that means go up. They start to descend after high school. So you'll pass them on the way up. When you're on your fucking way, they'll be shining your goddamn shoes. There you go. Fuck them. Fuck bullies. And if it gets really bad, give me a call.
Okay, yeah, I mean, anybody named Tony, I'm on board with, especially when he's tough. Tony, don't be too tough, but I liked what you had to say, and I'll keep it in mind as I go forward in my life. Thanks, Tone. Love you, Tony.
That's awesome. That was really good. That was almost too good.